I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Big thanks to RX Bar for supporting FilmSack today. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar with no BS. Get 25% off your first order at rxbar.com/FilmSack and use the promo code FilmSack. That's rxbar.com/FilmSack. And the promo code FilmSack.
Mrs. Fisk, John Goodhue, Regional Vice President. Congratulations! Which prize are you hoping for? Well, that would be my choice, too.
We've never been.
My associate tells me you have 5 grandkids? Wow! Now, I understand that you'd like to speak to your husband first about this, and I can understand why, but the thing is, Irene, my secretary's having a baby this afternoon, and everyone here at the office is about to bug out and head over to the hospital.
Go for the gut. He's soft there. This is FilmSack. Oh, sure.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to FilmSack. This is FilmSack. Proper 345, that's the episode we're on. I'm Scott Johnson, joined today by Brian. Never trust a psychiatrist that plays chess with himself, Dunaway.
Chess with himself. Oh, hi, FilmSack men.
Hello.
Who shall we con today? The listeners? Little old ladies? Randy? Unsure if I meant little old ladies, then Randy, or Randy likes to con little old ladies, or perhaps Randy is just really into geriatrics. Show notes problems. Am I right? Yes, I am. Well, I hope you enjoyed that little distraction. Meanwhile, I swapped your sack of good intros with bad impressions of Nicolas Cage. Good luck, Randy.
Was that
Oh, look, a little old lady.
Wow. That was great. Also with us, Randy, no booth, Jordan.
Aloha, Scott. Brian.
Hi.
Randy.
And I got your final receipt here for the various magic props you rented from Can't Fool Me over the last few weeks. Let's see here. 2 identical briefcases, an office space suitable for a psychiatrist, a Queen Anne piano stool that smells like feet, boys. Please initial here for the extra charge on cleaning that piece. Okay, we got your purchase and use of some high-quality squibs and blood packets for your words here. A magic show. Hope that went well. But then there's this shipping container rental. Now, I'm not too pleased with you boys for putting that thing on top of a building. How'd you get it up there? Wait, I'm up there. What's going on? How did I get so easily tricked? Come on.
Everybody's easily tricked in this movie.
I like the absurdity of it all.
It's pretty good. Also with us, Brian Ibbett.
That's the best. Yeah. So this week on FilmSack, we watch... Wait a minute. Do you guys hear that buzzing?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. All right. Sorry. All right. This week on FilmSack, we watched a film where Nicolas... Oh, God, I swear I hear buzzing. You guys don't hear it? Here, let me jump online really quick, see if it's the router. Ah, yeah, sure enough, there's a firmware upgrade for my router. Crap, it's like a paid upgrade, $200. and it's first of the month. I'm waiting for some clients to pay me. I don't really have the funds in my account right now. Can one of you guys float me some money right now? And I'll totally make this a lot easier. Instead of sending me the money via PayPal, just give me your PayPal login. I'll log into the router's firmware site. I'll buy the upgrade and we'll be all set.
All good? Sure. Yeah,
that's perfect. I like it. It's a good plan.
All right. That's it. That's the end of it. I had no perfect clothes for that.
Right. So this is yours is the long con. I hope it pays off the Twitter. But yeah. We'll see.
The long con. You guys aren't going to find out until the end of the show how that's going to go.
Brian,
if you just have internet problems throughout this episode, I think it will be so fun.
Oh, it'd be great.
And it will fit in with your long cons.
Yeah, just start doing one of these. Go, oh no, something's wrong with my machine. You can do that. So welcome everyone to Film Sack. It's Matchstick Men is the film. And you might be saying to yourselves, hold on, guys, that's like a well-respected Ridley Scott film from 2003 that is not your normal fare. It's not weird or nostalgic or a horror movie or have bad effects or anything.
And that you've never heard of.
Well, I saw it in theaters, weirdly. I kind of had this thing going back then where if Ridley Scott made a movie, this is like post... Gladiator.
Okay.
I was like, well, I'll just see whatever he does from now on. Like, I already liked you and I, you know, Blade Runner and whatnot and Aliens and stuff, but, you know.
It's a pretty safe bet.
Yeah. And so when this came out, I remember critics loving it and I remember hearing that it was really a good movie, but also strange for Ridley Scott, like not his usual fare. This is not Black Hawk Down. This is not, you know, Gladiator. It was something wholly different and weird for him. And it was his first Warner Brothers production since Blade Runner. So it was just like this, all this weird intrigue for me for whatever reason. And so I went and saw it in theaters and really, really liked it at the time. What I didn't know was it was a box office bomb. It made like half the money it cost to make it. It made back half that, I should say. So it was like $65 million budget, which, by the way, I don't quite understand. How is this not just like some shoestring indie budget?
Yeah, like $12 million, right? It had to be the actors. It had to be Nicolas Cage, right? That had to be the lion's share.
I think Randy hit the nail on the head. The price, a lot of that price was getting a shipping container on the top of a roof of a building.
Might have been the big part.
That's a big part of the joke of my intro, is that the film counts on a house in somewhere in Los Angeles County that's like every other house. Like, it counts on an office space for a psychiatrist to, like, I don't even think they use they use an actual airport for the airport stuff.
That was my question on the plot. Are we supposed to assume that they kept going further because they couldn't get what they want, and so it got to this absurd point? But they had plans along the way, because there was one point in time when the daughter, spoilers, if you haven't watched it, too bad, was
that,
trying to...
That actually wasn't a spoiler.
Right. So the daughter was actually trying to see the number when they were at the safety deposit box at one point in time. If she could have acquired it at that point, would that have been enough for the con to stop?
Yeah, so, probably. Would have ended your movie, sure.
Because it gets ridiculous by the end.
No, it totally does. I think it pays off pretty well with the twist and stuff, and it worked for me. And I'd forgotten kind of how that all turned out.
I had totally forgotten.
Really? I am very much a person of the moment, and for some reason, they tipped their hat too soon for me, and I knew the twist really early on, and I don't know why. I'm usually not good at this. I suck at this.
See, that's really funny, because you got it early, and this is your first viewing, right?
Right.
Yeah, yes. For me, this is my first time in the theater, second time seeing it, and it got me both times.
So this was my first time watching it, and I totally knew every beat coming from beginning to end. Like, and the reason is because I have a kid now. Yeah. And as soon as you have a kid, the instant a child comes into your life and you feel any sort of parental anything, you start wanting badly to hear from other people about that child. Like, the idea that he wouldn't be in direct contact with who he thought was that child's mother from the first word is mind-boggling. And so the film had constructed this big disease, right? Like there are all these different conditions for the main character to try to explain this huge gaping plot hole of him not ever contacting her mother until it was too late. And that was, of course, not going to be believed by me, the audience. The audience isn't going to believe that he's really as sick, or not as sick, he's really as disordered as he appears to be. Why? Because he's a con man. And he literally says to other people, you got to recognize when you're the mark, right? So as the audience, I'm looking, the movie's begging me to figure it out, right? Like to assume that nobody's true, and what, you know, what are they actually up to?
Well, apparently Bibbit and I are easy marks then, because we got
I'm usually a really easy mark.
Snowed in by that.
Yeah.
Right. Usually I'm an easy mark. It's odd. The thing that tripped me up really quick and early was something that maybe wasn't intended. If you notice in the movie, everybody who smokes is a con man. Everybody who starts to try to smoke ends up being a con man. Guess let's play on the matchstick man motif theme, whatever. Okay. So as soon as the original doctor disappeared and this other doctor appears and he's smoking, I'm like, am I supposed to be implying something about this character? And so it kind of tipped it for me. Now, if I just saw this back in 2000, when we still saw at least some people smoking on film, I don't know if I would have caught on as quick. But in the year 2017, seeing somebody smoke on a film is instantly attention grabbing.
Yeah, he was smoking. Like, that's the other thing. Yeah. I wrote this in my notes, so I may as well ask it now. If you're that fastidious and that OCD and that, you know, jacked up about stains and opening the door three times and all the stuff that he was doing, like the extreme form of whatever condition he was dealing with, I feel like smoking would be the...
You're right, the worst. Right.
Yeah, wouldn't smoke.
Because ashes all over the place, the smoke, I mean... You know, as much as he freaked out when they opened the window to let the dog, or opened the door to let the dog out, and behind Sam Rockwell, there's all that pollen that he's seeing floating around.
Yeah.
I would think that smoke would probably be...
it'd be up there.
And I just want to, I want to acknowledge, because I really don't want to get too far into this and get emails and stuff. There are three separate conditions portrayed here, right? There's OCD, there's agoraphobia, and there's germophobia. Those aren't always one and the same. They're not always related, right? This film relates them in one person, but we get that this is a movie. You're supposed to suspend disbelief. Maybe it's not a perfect representation of what people who suffer from these things are actually going through. The film really takes licenses with the whole psychiatrist relationship and the meds and so on.
Yeah, but they could have. I mean, the portrayal is potentially accurate in that there could be somebody who's dealing with all three of those things or something.
Yes.
And it's all based on some book. It's not supposed to be a real book. It's a fictional book, but you know,
it's not a real book.
I bought into this. I liked the idea of this guy who had this horrible thing with all of the ticks and the grunts and the twitching eye and the everything, but then could turn that all off when he got into the zone. And the zone being like, now I'm deceiving somebody for large wads of money.
Mm-hmm. And then I named OCD, agoraphobia, and germophobia. He has panic attacks. And that's not necessarily a, you know, like named disorder for him. And you don't know exactly where it's coming from. But the movie tries to make you wonder, is he making this up? You know, like is this part of the con? And you don't really know.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
I felt like I knew early because it would be, it breaks the rules. If, for example, you're over at that lady's house, this is very early in the film, and the husband's there and the dog and all that. And
they open the old lady. Who is the old lady? She's an actress who has been in
Who is that old lady? She is an actress.
Who is that little old lady?
They hired her from a casting call. She is an actress. I don't know who she is. Is she somebody famous? Do we know her?
She's somebody we've seen before for sure.
No.
Yeah, she's in a TV series. It is Jenna O'Hara.
Okay.
And you probably remember her I remember her most well from the movie Devil, because she plays really well.
Oh, right. She was just the crazy lady in the elevator with them, freaking out like a crazy woman.
Oh,
yeah.
Still haven't seen that. Yeah, it's a
Shyamalan deal. She's been in lots of TVs and lots of film shows, so she's quite recognizable.
Is that the M. Night Shyamalan deal where she's in?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Still
she used to
that.
Be on my mom's soap opera. My mom watched As the World Turns every day.
I thought you were going to say your mom was on a soap opera. That'd
yeah,
be awesome.
That'd be awesome.
Well, because I was differentiating from my soap opera. I watched Days of Our Lives. My mom watched As the World Turns.
We all watched Days of Our Lives because
all men of a certain age watch Days of Our Lives in college.
I don't know what happened there. I still, to this day, we've talked about it on TMS. I scratch my head and wonder, why is it that our range of generation was watching that? I don't get
right.
it.
Right.
Like, why did that ever matter? It's beyond me. I still don't get
she
it.
Was,
you don't have the internet as a reason, because the internet was not bringing us all together.
We were binge-watching the continuing adventures of Patch and Kayla.
Yeah. Patch. Yeah. Oh, my shit. Right. Patch.
But
I forgot about
Jenny,
Patch.
Jenny O'Hara as the first Mark, brings us squarely into... This film has quite a cast, and maybe that's kind of part of the reason it was so over budgeted. Maybe it cost a lot, not for any one person, but just to get all of these different people. And Bruce Altman costs money, and Bruce McGill costs money. Not a lot, but it adds up, right?
Yeah, I love Bruce McGill. Right. Actually, the two Bruces in this thing are that Bruce, the other guy, the psychiatrist dude, Bruce number one, Altman. He is all over the place right now. He's in a couple of shows I really like. He was had a relatively big part in Mr. Robot season one, maybe
Mr.
two.
Mr. Robot. Oh,
he was really good in that, and he's always slimy bastard in these things now. And he's
apparently in Ozark.
Yeah, he was in Ozark, which I just finished, and he was only in the. I won't tell you why. He was only in the first couple episodes. But he's an interesting dude. So it was interesting seeing him. And then Bruce McGill, I just find like him, I don't know what it is about that guy's face. There's something about that dude that is both funny and really disconcerting. I can't,
intimidating. Right? Yeah. Kind of intimidating. You don't want Bruce McGill pissed at you.
No.
Right.
It just now occurred to me that Bruce McGill was D-Day in Animal House.
Oh my gosh. What? Like,
the guy who puts the, you know, who drives off in the police car and kind of the one that everyone attributes a lot of the stuff that that D-Day does to Bluto, to John Belushi.
But the one with the mustache.
The one with the mustache. Yes.
I never put that together.
No. And it just dawned on me when I saw his IMDb. It's like his most popular role was in Animal House. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, interesting. Who's he? Oh, my God. He was D-Day.
That's crazy. Look at that. Yeah. These days, he's like a senator or a corrupt businessman or whatever.
Right. Southern lawyer or something. But
there's a great pitch. He should be Steve Bannon in the upcoming biopic.
Wait. Okay. Come back to me. There was a great example for who should play Steve Bannon. I got to find it.
Oh, well, what job?
And
the
it
HUD?
Wasn't Rosie O'Donnell.
Oh, no, it's not. I'm sure that's not Rosie O'Donnell. That doesn't. That's a problem on a couple of fronts. It turns
out. To get back to what you were talking about, Scott, I think I totally derailed what you were going to tell us about the old lady.
Oh,
the old lady scene. Because I thought that was very emotional. What did you have to say?
No. I'm glad you brought me around to it. So my original point was, it was to answer Randy's question about whether or not we're supposed to wonder if we're being duped by him.
Right.
And I don't think so, because they break a rule if they do that. And the rule is, if you have a character viewed only moment, like the pollen and the sped up camera and the kind of freak out he's having when that door's open to let the dog out, like Ibbot was describing, then you can't then say later, oh, that was just, he was just fooling you. Because that's not, is an unfair thing to do to the audience. It's not, that is not within the rules. You're not playing sleight of hand, or you're not, like Sixth Sense, that's perfectly reasonable movie to be fooling us the entire time.
Right.
Totally.
Fight Club, reasonable to do it.
Yeah. Don't feel bad about either of those, because they're going about it in a very honest way. That, in this movie, I do not buy the idea that it was ever us being fooled by him, because that you can't do that. Like, you can't show him being affected and have him go, oh, I made up that special effect and put the little bugs in the background. Oh, ha, ha. Like, it doesn't work that
way. Right. If it wasn't filmed from his perspective to alienate us, that makes sense. Because, if you just saw his reaction, then you would go, okay, maybe.
Yeah.
So I get what you're saying, but I'm watching this movie for the first time and I'm trying to figure out who's conning who at all times, right?
Yeah.
And so it's real easy to disregard rules that you that are getting thrown at you in that moment.
That's sure, but saying. That but that particular rule, it would have been. I mean, it's just blasphemy. You can't do it. Mm-hmm. The girl. I mean, it's obvious. The girl. You know, when the reveal happens, or maybe if you perceive it ahead of time, but it's obviously what the girl's doing, and you know.
But I'm glad they brought it back around, because that saved the value of the character relationships that we built through the movie. Because I really, the thing I loved about this movie was the character relationships, really well developed.
I completely agree.
A lot of fun.
Completely agree. They could have. One of my least favorite things in anything, real life or fiction, is when somebody screws somebody over and then you never see them again.
Right.
Like,
right.
I need some kind of, like, look in their face, and I need something to finish that out. I need a way to, because you can't just sweep under the rug the actual relationship building stuff. And you knew that there was more to that than her just fooling him.
This movie hangs a lot on a chance encounter in a carpet store. because he never sees Frank again. He never sees Bruce McGill again. After he gives his doctor his password, he never sees him again. You know what I'm saying? Like, the con leaves him stranded all alone on a rooftop, and then it comes back to this thing in the carpet store, and it has to explain a lot of his character transformation, and it was too much. The whole time I'm like, what the hell is going to happen? Is he going to punch her in the face? Is there going to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, is he playing a con on her right now? And it was too burdensome that I didn't get to, for me, I didn't get to enjoy the sort of exchange where you can tell he's moved on. She is kind of forgiven, but I don't even know. Is she conning her new boyfriend? Like, I just don't, it's just like, there was a lot in there.
Yeah. And, well, he answered that very question, or asked that very question, asked her, is he a mark? And she's like, no, I actually really like him.
But how can he believe?
Well, you
her?
Don't. You're
she
right.
Stole his life savings.
You're totally right. You're totally right. When he's done, he's going to go back to Hawking Remnants, and you know, she's going to drive off.
With her age, I think there was some implication that she could change, and I kind of bought into it. I accepted if she is conning him, that's fine. But what's he got to lose left? Mm. There's nothing for her to gain by this. There's nothing for him to lose. So to me, it felt like a genuine experience, because how many times have we had some kind of bad relationship breakup, and then, like, you know, a year later, randomly they show up in your life and it's like, ooh, how do I handle this situation? This is like really uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. I could totally relate.
Can we talk about Alison Lohman's age? Because it actually leads to one of the best things in the film for me.
Mm.
So the whole movie is really about a con man getting conned by someone pretending to be much younger than they are, right? That's really...
Including, like, the actress. She's what, like 23 in real life?
She was 23 when she made the movie.
Yeah.
And in the context of the film, we don't know how old she actually... The character actually is, but the character...
They say 14, right?
Yeah, she's saying 14. We don't know how old the character was.
Yeah.
Because she's conning him, right?
Yeah.
But she was 23, and... That's a pretty big cliff to climb up as visually. And so for you, the viewer, and Ridley Scott, you know, he's never made real stinkers, right? He's made some pretty darn good films, and you can tell all of his expertise in this one scene where Nick Cage goes to try to spot his daughter outside a high school. Mm. And they have all these other kids coming and going. And he's like, well, I guess maybe. if she's that, you know, brown kid, then she's not mine. Right. And I guess if that sort of thing.
Mm. Right.
Everyone they show you is way over 14. Yeah. All the actors that they have walking around are about Alison Lohman's actual age. And you get visually drawn into a con as a viewer,
yep,
where you're like, oh, right, these are what 14-year-olds look like. And then you see her, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's what
makes
a 14-year-old
sense.
She also very impressively plays 14. Like, it's almost creepy to me how she pulled that off, because I remember seeing it in the theater the first time and thinking, oh, wow, this is a great child actor. Can't wait to see what she does next. And didn't realize, no, she's an adult actor.
I just want to give so much credit to both Ridley Scott and the producers and the casting person on this film, because they, in this quick little scene, they tricked me. bad into thinking these are what 14-year-olds look like by not just showing me Alison Lohman at 23, but by showing me probably a dozen people who are 23.
Well, and they just help reinforce it, you know? Yeah.
And when you see Angela at the end of the movie looking way, way, you know, much older. Right. Yeah, then you kind of think, okay, so, and that's only supposed to be a year after the con is revealed to Nicolas Cage. Yeah. So you're thinking, okay, well, so she definitely wasn't 14. She's probably more like 19, 20 or something. Playing,
and that's why she wore all those dumpy clothes to hide her figure. But then she, when she was to play older, she was more revealing. Yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely agree. It was that part was
pretty well brilliant. Played. Yeah, really well done. Played. I thought. Mm-hmm. I mean, who knows? It's a combination of things, but I think she deserves a ton of credit. She was really good.
Yeah, and kind of surprised we haven't seen other big things from her. I mean, Big Fish, Drag Me to Hell, Things White We Lost in the Fire.
Yeah. White Oleander, was that?
She in that?
I never saw that.
Yeah, I don't know. She's not doing a ton now, though. It's
Flicka, you know me, I love horse movies. No, wait, I hate them.
You don't like horse movies. Do you?
What? Brian doesn't like horse movies. I hate horse movies. What? No. Sorry, horse lovers.
Okay. Well, movies that like War Horse and Secretariat, things like that. Okay.
Hate.
Godfather. Godfather's probably big on your list, though. Ones you
well,
like.
I like Godfather because the horse takes a turn. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Hold on. I want a tidy definition of horse movie.
I think
a movie that. Primarily contains a horse in the story.
Hold on. We all get that Seabiscuit and Black Stallion is a horse movie. I get that.
Right.
Secretariat, horse movie. Where's the outer edge? Like, is Hidalgo a horse movie?
Yeah.
Kind of. Unsure because the horse just carries him, right? They have a relationship. I haven't seen the movie. I don't think it's featured prominently.
Let me just think of another example.
Six. Oh, nice. I knew you was going to go there. I knew somebody'd go there. Good job.
You didn't think it would be me as much as
I didn't. I was over here looking at, you conned me because I was looking at Scott.
So if it's primarily about a horse person, like Man from Snowy River or Horse Whisperer. Okay. Horse Whisperer has horse in the title. Never mind.
Yeah. No, that's not going to work for me.
But like, I just want to know where the boundary is. Like,
Planet of the Apes, I'm okay with that because what? There's like, you know, there's horses in there, but they're not
central plot. So you're okay with?
Yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, you're okay with horse as vehicle as conveyance, but you're not interested when they're the focus.
I want to relegate horses to, you know, to vehicles, right?
Yeah. I get it. No. Fascinating.
How does a horse, when it becomes a character, ruin a movie for you? I would love to understand.
Okay, so all right, it goes back to when I was a child. I had a horse throw me. Every horse I have been around, and this is just my personal experience. It's okay. You can write an email if you want to and go, Brian, horses are fantastic, and you could tell me for 20 minutes how these great horses were to you. All I've ever seen in my life, personally, and I don't want to be exposed to any more horse information, is bad horse things.
Horses are dicks.
Horses kick at each other in the ribs to kill each other. Not to say, excuse me politely. No, to kill each other. And I've been around those horses, and they're just, every horse I've encountered has been a dick. Don't get me wrong. I know you love horses, people. It's all right. You can love horses, and it's okay if I'm not very fond of them.
No, just from my experience. You know, I totally get it. It's funny. I don't share the hatred of the horse, but I totally understand it. Especially when it's like, look, it's a horse. We've made him very like a person. He's got emotions. And, you know, like, I bet that your worst torture would be pinning you down and forcing you, like, wrap your entire hands behind your back, hold your eyes open with toothpicks, and make you watch, like, Mr. Ed for, like, 12 hours straight.
Right. Or whatever the Elizabeth Taylor movie where she's National Velvet.
Right.
make you watch that one.
Do you know how much I hate? I have a fear as well. So that's probably part of it. Do you know how many times I hate going to parades and stuff that has horses in them because I'm like, oh, here comes the horses. Back up. Don't care for it. That's just me.
I think that's
great. I don't know right now whether Dunaway has an actual phobia or he's just conning us.
Yeah, right. It would be a perfect time, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I believe it too.
I think that you don't like them, genuinely. And we'll never listen. As much as I hate to say this, but maybe we slip a horse focused, you know.
I hear they're remaking Minority Report with an all horse cast.
That would be fantastic.
I'm actually surprised we haven't seen a film like Secretariat or Black Stallion
just because this show. I've quietly been steering you away from it. Mm. Ooh, Secretariat. No
pun intended.
right.
So maybe we could put in.
Maybe we could not.
I have an idea. Who do we cast in our all horse movie? I'm putting. I'll tell you who I'm putting in. Adam Driver. He'll be in there as a horse. He's got a horse face.
Oh, God. Oh, so you're trying to come up with the ugliest actors? Okay, hold
on.
Was it Cortese? Who's the guy, the MTV guy that...
Cortez?
Cortez.
Dan Cortez?
I'm okay with horse type people. It's the horses.
I'm okay with horse type people, is what you said just now. That's amazing. I never want to forget that. I want that emblazoned on a shirt or something. I'm okay with horse-type people.
Yeah.
Dear Adam Driver, you're ugly, but Brian Dunaway says he's okay with
you. And also, you'll notice I don't remember calling anybody ugly ever. I try to back off that. I'm kind of a wuss when it comes to that stuff. I prefer the term unique-looking person.
There you go. All right. I mean, I only say Adam Driver because I used to get in trouble for the Sex and the City lady when I'd say her name. So I've moved Adam Driver to create less chaos around me.
Great. And what I've done is I've just reopened that wound.
Yeah, well done, right. Brian. Well done. So I was going to say one other thing about Adam Driver. Don't you think if you were on any project, film, movie, TV, whatever, with Adam Driver, that whenever you get close to finishing your film... or it's like only got a day or two left of shooting, you would call him or text him and say, come and finish what you started. Wouldn't you do that every time?
Absolutely.
Okay. I would too. And would you do it in the voice? Would you say, finish what you started? Would you do that? I would.
Without a doubt.
Okay.
Yes.
So would I. Anyway, so the point, one of my points earlier was the movie only made half its money back, which made me a little bit sad. But also, Nicolas Cage was making way too much money per film back in 2003. So he was probably the biggest reason. The one person we haven't really talked about here is a guy I'll watch garbage movies because he's in.
Yeah, yeah.
Sam Rockwell is amazing.
But the guy hasn't made any garbage movies. Even Choke, which is based on a Chuck Palahniuk novel, I think is good because of him. Mm, maybe not good because of the rest of the film. It was based on a great book, but even Choke is better because of Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, like, so nobody, believable.
Nobody loves or hates the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy movie, but Sam Rockwell sure as hell elevates it.
Oh, yeah. For sure. No, he's great. I like that movie fine, but he definitely helps it. He's great in everything. First thing I ever saw him in was Galaxy Quest, and then it was from then on, it was like, oh, I love him and everything. And I feel like there's been less Sam Rockwell in our lives for the last few years. Why do I feel that way? Because I know it's not true. There's got to be
He's
things.
Doing the animated thing on Netflix now, that F is for Family.
And I haven't seen that yet. I'm interested. Okay.
He's been really focused on like one-shots, like cameos and TV series and stuff, which makes me wonder if like he has a family now. Like he's in a time in his career when he's trying to, you know, like raise kids with his wife or something.
I mean, there's stuff like Poltergeist remake in 2015. But then there's all these things I've never heard of, like Digging for Fire, Dawn Viridian, Loitering with Intent. Like, what is this?
Loitering with Intent. I love the title.
There's a ton of names of things, like Seven Psychopaths, the last thing I can really remember him being in a major movie with a bunch of stars, and that was 2012, so it's been a while, you know?
I didn't realize Hitchhiker's Guide was the first thing he did after Matchstick Men.
Oh,
They were back-to-back projects, yeah.
So that's where he ended up, so... There you go.
He was in that G-Force.
Confessions of a...
That horrible
the
G-Force.
Chuck Barris thing.
Yeah, that was really good.
Now, I'll tell you, Moon, that movie, I was engaged the whole time. I don't think I've watched it. It's been a while since I've watched a movie with that type of engagement. Right?
Yes. That's his best film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. Yeah. It was amazing. So 2009, a long time ago. But
And while the words best film are floating through the air, give me your Ridley Scott, because I have a pretty strong opinion here. Ridley Scott, best movie for you, Brian Ibbett.
Blade Runner.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, it's hard for me not
that's
to.
That's not my answer, as you know.
No, oh, good.
I guess.
Scott Johnson. Scott Johnson.
I'm going to say, oh, geez.
So many.
Oh, there's so many.
Do you want me to go while you think about it?
Okay, wait. Does it count if it's a director's cut of something that wasn't very good otherwise?
That's that's a good, yeah, of course. Because
Kingdom of Heaven is one of the best movies I've ever seen. I freaking love that movie. But I'm probably going to say Gladiator.
But you like the remake. The director's cut,
which is way long. It's like two and a half hours or something. It's really, really good. Just it's maybe some of the best work he's ever done. But I don't know. There's so many, dude. This is hard. Black Hawk Down, I'm going to say. I'll say that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. Black Hawk Down.
Black Hawk Down.
It's not a very complicated movie, right? It's like a really short road trip across the city.
It's like kind of. I mean, I don't know how to explain it. It's super intense. I'd love that movie. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't even matter that Josh Hartnett was sort of a heartthrob at the time and has gone nowhere since, really. It just was a great movie with all kinds of good actors. And Sam Shepard, by the way, who just passed last week, was in that, played the colonel. It's great in that. Oh, my gosh. There's just something about the tone and everything. It's Hans Zimmer's soundtrack is one of his best for sure. It's just really good. If you haven't seen Black Hawk Down in a while, maybe my favorite war movie. I haven't seen Dunkirk yet, but you know, who knows if that'll challenge it or not.
It's a good call. So we got Blade Runner, Black Hawk Down, Dunaway. What'd you say?
Easy for me. Alien.
Yeah, good one.
It's just a movie that I watch over and over again. I watch it every year. I mean, maybe even two or three times a year. I just turn it on.
It's probably I put that and Gladiator together as the most rewatchable movies of his. The ones you can just kind of sit down and see again over and over and not feel bad about it.
Oh, see, for me, Blade Runner is that for me as well.
Yeah, Blade Runner is great for that as well.
And it's important to point out, Ridley Scott is not a one-trick pony. He makes movies like Blade Runner, which are big and sweeping, and he makes movies like The Martian, which is just putting a camera in front of Matt Damon and getting a performance out of him. And Ridley Scott does it well. I was thinking, if the topic was what's his worst movie, I don't really care what his worst movie is.
It's probably Robin. It's probably Robin Hood, or maybe that one, the one where he remade the Moses deal. It was that
the Moses, you know, the Moses deal, that thing with Moses deal, the baby in the basket.
What's that one called that had Batman in it? I'm gonna look it up. It's called
Moses and Batman.
Oh, it's the one right before
Exodus,
The Martian.
Gods and Kings.
Yeah, Gods and Kings, 2014. That is not a good movie.
It might be Hannibal, right? Because the studio.
Oh, I never watched.
Oh,
it.
I liked Hannibal just fine. Hannibal was great.
It's because the book is so bad.
He was a producer on that. Is that okay? Do we count?
No, he directed. No, he directed. He directed it and
produced directed it too? I thought he just produced it.
No. He directed Hannibal. Hannibal's good.
But anyway, like my answer is Gladiator. And the film has really grown on me over the last 15 years. Like when it first came out, I was not that thrilled by it. But every now and then it's streaming on Netflix and I'll sit and watch it. And there are very few movies that I will just sit and rewatch on Netflix. There's so much to see.
Yeah.
You know,
you might ask, are you not entertained? You almost ask yourself.
He asks himself that.
It's such a complete film. And I hate to compare it to something that's, you know, 20 years younger, older than it. Right. Mm-hmm. But my complaint about Blade Runner was that it didn't feel like a complete film. It felt like it you know, played a lot of tricks with me with you know, making as little of a movie as it needed to, and I know you guys all saw a better version of it than I did. Gladiator is such a huge movie. It's got so many different things to entertain you. And the music, the score, top five of my entire collection of scores, Gladiator.
Yeah, it's really good. Another Hans Zimmer.
Go ahead.
That seems like it would be easily everyone's favorite Russell Crowe film.
Right. can I ask? Sure. I've never seen it, but I suspect film sackiness, Michael Douglas's Black Rain.
Oh, is that
directed by Ridley Scott?
Yes, for sure. I saw that. I had a friend named Angel who was like big into Michael Douglas.
Right.
And, basically, it was always movie night over at her house. It was the precursor to Netflix and chill, except all we did was watch movies. There was nothing else going on there.
Videotape and rewind.
Exactly. It was. It was Blockbuster and rewind. And I remember seeing that movie, and all I can remember is Michael Douglas running around in the rain a lot. It was Japan or something, right?
This is so literal. It is literally.
Wow.
I remember being really disappointed because I was a big, and still am obviously, a big Blade Runner fan, a big Ridley Scott fan. And so I was expecting something as good as Blade Runner, and I remember being hugely disappointed.
Well, look what you got here. You got not just Michael Douglas. You got Andy Garcia. You got Kate Upshaw, Upshaw. Right. You got John Spencer. I love him. You got
We love that guy.
Steven Root and Luis Guzman. Like, maybe that is really? That looks like a sackable movie to me.
And this is one of the movies. This is one of the movies that gave us Jan de Bont. Right? He was sort of the visionary cinematographer for Black Rain.
Yeah, right, that's now. All he did for a while until he came around to Speed or whatever he did first. I'm just looking.
I get this film confused a lot with that one that we watched.
Yeah, Hard Rain every time, and it's the title.
Hard Rain and Rising Sun.
Oh, interesting.
Really? Yeah. Hard Rain and Rising Sun.
And then now I'm confused with a video game called Heavy Rain.
Yeah. No, that game should confuse you. It was confusing.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I remember White Squall, G.I. Jane. Some of these aren't very good, but, you know, I don't know that he's ever made a total dumpster movie. Like, there's a lot of... Oh, I forgot he made that 1984 Apple Mac ad. That was Ridley Scott. Yeah, that was right after Blade Runner, 2 years after.
The Watch Over Me was pretty good with Bodyguard. What was it? Tom Berenger, I think.
Yeah, no, that sounds
protecting,
right.
Protecting Tom Cruise's ex-wife.
Yep. Robin Hood was really bad. There you go. There's one. That's a bad one.
I'm trying to look through his Rotten Tomato reviews. Even Black Rain seems to be at 50%. So if you can... If you get even on a bad movie at 50%, you're doing pretty good.
He's never made a bad one. But I mean, the main thing is we went around, we named our four favorite Ridley Scott films. None of us said Matchstick Men. And it's not that it's bad, but did you all finish like me thinking, oh, that ending could have been different?
Well,
it's all I've been able to think about.
Maybe, but apparently according to the trivia, he fought for that because it's the book's ending, and the producers and others didn't want the book's ending. They didn't think it had enough splash, and maybe that's what you're speaking to, but I guess he fought to keep it. So
I'm speaking to the last 15 years since this movie came out have been nothing but thrillers and black comedies that are super smart and have twists upon twists. You know, this movie ultimately doesn't. When you're waiting for the final shoe to drop, Ridley Scott just holds it and walks away. You know,
it's entirely possible that I'm super obtuse about this and I don't understand it. But what does the Matchstick Men refer to? What does that mean?
It is con men. Con men fabricate quick cover stories about their person that is quickly just a quick burn.
But it's a quick burn.
It's just a quick burn of a name. You know, you don't just throw it away. You know, it's nothing. It's trash.
Holy cow! Because I had to look at the trivia. I'm amazed that they could have left the major con. So when you say they left it out of the screenplay, we're talking about the major con. We're talking about
the long con.
The whole big
reveal
at the end of the film. That seems. How do you do this movie without having that?
If you don't have that, I don't think you have a movie. Like you kind of. I mean, you do. Yeah. It's interesting, but then it's just tropey. Like. Daughter comes back and now he has to reevaluate his life and it's different because she's 14 and you know if that's all it was, then it's no longer the setup for a much broader thing. I agree.
How do they end this if there's not a big long con, like, you know, the one that he's not aware of?
So what I'm talking about is that he ends up just as okay, if not better off, than he was at the start of the movie. Probably better off. He's driving a nice car. He's got a job. He's got a nice house, a wife, and pregnant. Like it's like the movie ends, and I'm like, wait a minute. He's totally fine. This all went down, and he's fine.
Yeah,
like,
I'm good with that.
Are you not okay with that? How did you not be okay with that?
I've seen a lot of movies since then that are super smart and think they're really, really cagey and would have had something like. Either a character gets beaten up and the movie never stops beating up on them. Even in the very end, you find out, wow, he's got a horrible job now and he hates everything and nothing to go back to. Or everything's gone to hell, but he is actually the mover of all things. And you find out that he was conning him. Right. And so it turns out that he's got a separate safety deposit box. That they didn't even know about. That's got even more money in it, or something. You know what I'm saying?
But he has to end up. He does have to end up on, not necessarily on top, but he has to end up okay because the movie throughout the whole thing sets it up as most of the time he's pulling cons on people who can afford to be conned or people that that quote unquote deserve it. Even the lady in the laundromat, he makes Angela give the money back. So you say, okay, he's a good guy. He needs to end up on top.
We're saving. What we're
maybe
doing
not necessarily
is,
the old couple right. at the beginning. Yeah.
But what we're doing What we're doing is trying to save the character, even though he doesn't want to save himself or doesn't know he needs to save himself. I thought it was great. I love the ending and the way that it elevated the characters to where I wanted them to be. And I was actually pretty satisfied with.
Like, again, I get that. And you can watch this movie in its context. I'm just saying I've seen all of these Guy Ritchie films. And this, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I've seen things I can't forget, man.
You're scarred. I got you.
And this movie ends, and I'm like, wait, whoa, everything's fine? Like, oh, okay, I guess. And I've just been thinking about all the other ways it could have ended.
Right. Sure.
Yeah.
I could use more movies that everybody ends, because a lot of times it feels like a cheat. It's like, oh, you got there too fast. He didn't suffer for it. Everything in fines. That's stupid. But in this one, he suffered a lot for it, and I think it worked out well.
He paid his penance and had a chance to start over and do things the right way, which it seems like he did, working in the carpet. Mm-hmm. You know, working in the carpet business, the lucrative carpet business.
Yeah.
the other piece of trivia that you mentioned earlier, Randy, about the airport scenes not being filmed in the airport. You, Scott, and I, sorry, Brian Dunaway, are very familiar with where they filmed the airport scenes, because it's in the lobby of the Anaheim Convention Center where they have BlizzCon.
Now that
I think about it, those big pillars and those it's right there in the front, right?
Oh, that's hilarious. There could be key art right on to the left over there hanging from the thing.
Exactly, yeah.
Oh, that's funny. I thought maybe it was John Wayne International or something, because it reminded
me of
that.
Now that I'm looking it up, they went over to the Hilton to film the exterior. They actually filmed the Spearmint Rhino scene at the Spearmint Rhino, the actual club.
Yeah,
I'm never going there. Apparently the women don't take their clothes off, so I'm never going to that strip
club. Right? Yeah, what kind of strip club is that? Brian's not interested.
Almost strip club.
It's the most magical place on earth, is what they say.
You could feel Ridley Scott through that middle of the movie, keeping it PG-13. He was for a guy who made freaking Gladiator, Ridley Scott really towed the line on this is not going to go into our territory.
Well, even the freak out at the pharmacy could have gotten much darker and much more expletive filled.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Well, the nice thing about the I haven't read the book. I keep referring to the book, but I did do some digging around, and apparently it's very faithful to the book, and the book's a pretty clean, you know, deal. They don't go to any lengths to try to raunch it up. But he's certainly had his, you know, he's had probably, if you counted him up, he's more rated R than he is anything else.
But hey, it's time to talk about a different R. This is a terrible transition, but I'm going to try it anyway. Have you guys heard of RX Bar? Well, if you haven't heard of RX Bar, then you're crazy, because it's awesome. RX Bar is a whole food protein bar made with 100% whole ingredients and no BS, such as added sugar, artificial colors, artificial flavors, preservatives, or fillers, made with 100% whole ingredients. Just a few of them, too. Simple, clean ingredients you know the names of, and they all serve a purpose. For example, egg whites are the main source of its protein and is easy for your body to absorb. They're gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free, no added sugar, no artificial colors, flavors, preservatives, or fillers. They all taste great with a variety of flavors. They come in 11 delicious flavor varieties. Whether you like sweet and savory, chocolate, or fruit flavors, there's an RX bar for you. My favorite is the blueberry. Mmm, so good. They're perfect for breakfast on the go, snacks in the office. Put it in your bag before you get on the plane. You're heading to the gym. Take it with you. Workout pre- or post-workout snack. I really, really like it. Have I mentioned the blueberry? Get the blueberry. It's really good. Anyway, here's what I want you guys to do. Get 25% off your first order at rxbar.com. That's rxbar.com/filmsack. And use the promo code filmsack. That's rxbar.com/filmsack. And the promo code filmsack.
I feel like it was a period in the early 2000s where we were seeing a lot of films about bad dad redemptions based on children showing up they didn't know they had or had neglected, and suddenly become parents.
Yeah.
Again, by the way, Bad Dad Redemption is my favorite open world.
Oh, I love it. It was so good. You were too many horses for Dunaway, though. Too many horses.
Forget that miss. Too many movies from that time also featured in their trailers and their advertising. Money. Who sings that? Is it the OJs? Oh my gosh! It was in every freaking trailer about money.
Anything that had to do with Wall Street trading or con men or get rich quick or whatever. Yeah, yes.
I don't know if there was a deal that those couple of years on that song, but man, they used it.
It was a successor to the great Woohoo from Blur that they used for every other trailer besides that.
But
well,
do you guys have a favorite dad redemption story movie where, you know, dad's going down a bad path and a kid comes along and saves it?
Yeah.
The only one that can come to mind is the one with Ed O'Neill.
Ed!
What's the one we watched here? Not Rudy, but it's like the title is the name of the daughter that he goes and gets.
Right, right. Oh,
jeez. What the heck is that?
This is a trope, so it's got to exist as a thing somewhere.
Oh, for sure. I've got a couple of answers to this question.
Good, because I can't think. For some reason, I'm thinking of Star Wars, Luke and Vader.
Is it Dutch? It's Dutch.
Dutch. Yes, Dutch. Not Ed O'Neill. It's
Ed O'Neill.
It is Ed O'Neill. Yes, but it's a boy that he's picking up, right?
That's right, Ethan Embry. Yes, Dutch is.
Oh, Ethan Embry's his kid?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no way. He's he's Papa Giorgio in the third.
He is, yes.
Yeah. That's awesome. I like Ethan Embry. So all right. My brain's not working. I know there's a million of these. I can't think of one. Why can't I think of one?
So the first one that came to mind was Richard Linklater's Boyhood. And the reason that came to mind is because lately I've heard so many people laud that film. Like, it's so important. And it's actually, I mean, it's just a great trick. Like, Linklater spent a very long time making a movie. It's not that great a movie, but I mean, give him props for spending most of his life making it. Yeah. Ethan Hawke is the dad in that movie, and you spend a lot of the movie wondering if he is going to end up being, you know, like, okay for his son, and in the end, he is, and it's kind of cool that way. It's very realistic. But the one I love, like, if I could have one dad movie, like, if I'm on my deathbed on Father's Day and I'm going to watch something with my son, it's the Tim Burton movie Big Fish.
Oh, yeah, Big Fish. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Second time we've talked about that today. It's very
because it's, you know, Albert Finney has obviously been not a great dad, and the movie spends the entire time kind of sewing him back together for Billy Crudup's character, and I really like that.
Yeah, I know there's a million of these, but I can't think of any. I don't know. That's bugging me, because I know there's a million of them. They're like, there's so many movies. It's like, oh, your dad's a mobster and the kid's not, and oh, you've softened up the mobster, but I can't even think what that movie is.
Well, I really like, even though it's one of the few, I won't even say it, I like Adam Sandler films most of the time. There's a lot of crap, but there's a lot of good ones too. And Big Daddy, for me, even though it uses cheap tricks,
it's totally though. You're right.
It works.
It's totally that trope for sure. Like, oh, he's a weirdo, slobby guy living on his own. And then, oh, well, this is weird. I got a kid living with me now. What do I do? Like, the more I talk about this, the more there are little flickers of answers in my head, and I can't think of them. It's freaking me out.
How about Kramer versus Kramer?
Sure.
That whole Dustin Hoffman thing.
Sure. Yeah. All I remember about that was I remember at the time going, man, that pretty lady from Young Frankenstein's barely covering up her bits. I remember that. I remember because she was covering up her boobies in her crotch, and she was in the hallway. I remember that.
Is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade a good example of a father-son movie?
A little bit.
I don't know about a father redemption.
Does he redeem?
Movie,
I know. Does he redeem him? Yeah, no. That's the question.
I don't think he redeems him. It's more about Indy getting redeemed a little bit. Yes, right. I still say put it in the list.
We could go, does Darth Vader kind of redeem?
I was thinking of Star Wars earlier. A little bit. I mean, basically, it's a life interrupted trope. It's not really about dad, son so much. It's just that's the most common one. But it's just my life is being interrupted by a thing that I'm now responsible for. And there's lots of things you got to
do a lot more work to come back from cutting your kid's hand off.
Yeah.
you cut your kid's hand off.
Yeah, that's a big one.
You're never going to fix that.
Well, they got good robots. They'll take care of you. But here's the thing. I always bring up Savannah Smiles for various reasons on this show because it had an impact on me when I was a kid. I'm sure if I watched it now, I'd think it was sappy garbage. But at the time, I thought it was really something. And that is the same trope, except it's not. They're not related. This little girl, rich little or family's rich girl, or girl from a rich family, gets kidnapped by these two bumbling criminals who have a complete and utter change of heart because she just changes their lives. It's that same thing, you know?
Right. So maybe, except in this case, it was all a con.
Yeah, it was all a long con.
And Nick Cage says to her, recognize when you're the mark. Yeah. Like, it hurt me that he just, from that moment in the film when he says, recognize when you're the mark, he is the mark, and he never recognizes it, ever.
Yeah, ever. He's done good at his own advice. Like dads, they have good advice. Yeah. They don't always follow it, though. You know? It's like, son, don't put gas on top of things. It'll light on fire. Oh, shit! You know? That's a dad thing to do. All right, let's see. I was going to skip down here to something. What was it? It was Roy's pills were Benadryl. I noticed that and confirmed it.
Oh, really? That's funny. So they didn't even use soy estrogen or premenstrual pills or something like that.
No, especially the ones he dumped in the sink, those colorful ones, totally
Benadryl. The question in my mind was, how long had this con been going on? Because that doctor who prescribed the pink pills had disappeared.
Right.
So was that also like the first step in the con, or is that just, you know, irrelevant?
How they figured out they could get an in was that.
Right.
Well,
the key to it all was Frank, right? And I started noticing really quickly, like, Frank got his doctor. Frank went and got Bruce McGill at a strip club. Like, Roy wasn't bringing anything into his life. You know, like the whole thing stems from Frank. And so it wouldn't surprise me at all if Frank had been doctoring Roy behind his back for years. You know?
Yeah, right? He was setting him up. I think so. Sure.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. All the way down to bringing a sandwich in. You know, you don't bring a sandwich to somebody's house and be dropping crumbs. You don't have to be OCD not to like that.
You don't. You really don't. Right. You can be 100% of, you know, emotionally stable human being without any kind of anything, and that would still bug you.
Just rub a remote control on your butt, and that's all you really need to do.
All right. Who here has ever used, I wrote this in my notes, any of us ever actually in our lives used one of those shoehorns that are like a full cane style shoehorn?
Yes, I actually of course. Have.
I've never used one in my life.
I've used a shoehorn, but not one that's like a shoehorn on a stick.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes, I have. I used to travel with one because I had really nice shoes. It was the one thing I did for myself when I was traveling for business was I bought very expensive shoes, and they were fitted tight. Like the guy who sold them to me was like, you do not want these to be too large. And so I bought this extendable shoehorn. It was on a stick that, you know, like was only like 8 inches long, but then you extended it all the way out.
So it was like one of those antenna things where you,
if you need a device to get your foot into your shoe, perhaps.
I know. Yeah.
It seems like that would retract accidentally.
The wrong shoe.
Like right. if you're holding it in there with, it seems like that would retract. How did it stay firm and stiff?
Well, it's not like you put any pressure against the shoehorn to get your foot in the shoe. I mean, basically, all it needs to do is act as a little water slide for your heel
just
to go.
Exactly what his little slide.
A little down water.
I did it.
I felt one thing I don't like about these movies is these kinds of movies is I feel bad for the people. Like I felt bad for the lady at the laundromat. I just feel bad. I can't stand the idea
of the laundromat. She's also an actress.
The idea of
she
lying.
Got her money back.
Yeah, she did. But the idea of breaching someone's innocent trust like that is very uncomfortable for me. I hate it. I hate the feeling of it. This movie dances around that pretty well. Like it makes you less empathetic with like the lady in the house with the dog and the grumpy husband who signs the thing. Like,
right,
whatever. They look like they almost deserved it. But
well, he does, but she doesn't. I mean, that is what you try to do. And it's kind of like the Dexter thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where he only kills the people that deserve it.
Right.
And it feels like that's kind of what they do with the couple at the beginning. Oh, he's mean to the dog and he talks down to his wife. He deserves to lose some money. And the one in the laundromat, she gets her money back. So that one's okay. And Bruce McGill, maybe he's kind
greedy.
Of a dick. And she is greedy. Right. She, you know, she immediately thinks she's going to get half of this this lottery ticket that clearly Angela dropped.
Then later on, she's gonna, you know, she's what was she in Jericho? Yeah, she sucked in that. So
oh, I like Jericho though. Jericho needed to keep going. That movie, show was cool. So who's our chick in the bucket? Do we have one?
Oh, I actually had thought about that. I can't remember.
I mean, Frank, we knew he left because we had a letter, so that summed that up. The doctor
was in on it. Bruce McGill, I assume, was also in on it. That's never
maybe Bruce McGill's as close as we get.
Because he didn't. It's a good one.
It wasn't overtly explained.
He genuinely looked pissed, and he didn't look like he'd be that good an actor to be pissed, but he had to be. He had to be involved in it.
Yeah, he seemed involved. Well, he had to because she shot him, and we all assumed he was dead.
Right. Of course, the squibs. Yes.
And so, he had to be in on it. But I feel like we got no closure with him. Like I needed him later at a mall, like smiling or something. Or I don't know. I don't know why at the mall.
Hard feelings, Roy.
You know, there was something in this movie that was meant to create anxiety in the viewer that doesn't play true anymore because the technology isn't there or is not widely used. The answer machine pickup. You used to have to worry that if you called an answer machine and was in the middle of leaving your message, that person might pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you do in that situation? We don't have that situation anymore. You don't pick up during leaving a message.
Once you go to voicemail, you're not pick-upable.
I wish that was a thing. I wish we could figure out a way to bring that back because that would really make some people crap
just,
their pants.
Again, smartphones change everything. Mm-hmm, and I'll bet you now a lot of people who used to have phone anxiety don't as much because of texting. Mm-hmm. Texting is a lot safer and a lot more controllable than phones used to be.
Is this going to be a thing that, and it kind of already is, but if Carter were to watch, I mean, I guess Carter probably experienced the whole answering machine where you hear the person leaving the message you know, while they're leaving it kind of thing.
Right. Yeah.
But shoehorns, would she?
No. Everyone in my household's going to see a shoehorn and go, what the crap is that, Dad? And I'll say, it's a little water slide for your heels.
That's something for the bedroom, children. Don't touch that.
Yeah, don't touch that. It's one of Daddy's special devices. So the other thing I thought about is a little more philosophical, a little out there, so bear with me here. But I got this weird feeling during this movie, and even though we know they're not related now, right? Like he's not the real father of anybody there.
And that's even worse.
It's worse, but there's so many movies, so much TV, so much fiction that requires actors to play legitimate related to each other people, like a real father-daughter, real daughter-mother, whatever. And what if we lived in a society? So here's where it gets philosophical. If we lived in a society where your actual lineage, like when you have a son or a daughter, they look just like you, like almost in every possible way. There's no way you could look at them and go, oh, you're not that person's kid. Think about how much visual art it would ruin. Like it would just destroy films, and you'd never be able to make a movie unless you had actual related people in it. You see what I'm saying? You had to be, if it was a father-daughter thing, they better be related, or else, you know, Angelina Jolie and John Voight would have to be in everything together. because otherwise you would never buy it. Do you know what I'm saying? It's kind of a weird thing to think about, but it was like midnight when I watched this, so
I was full of Doritos and I was thinking lots of weird things.
I was really out of it. I was super out of it, and I just thought, ooh man, you know it'd be light. Like I just it was a weird hypothetical, but anyway, there's that I wanted to share. I have some clips. I'm going to play them. They are representative of this film in terms of their quality and length. So here is one that is, I'm sorry, I'm being buying for time. Here it is. He's doing that thing again I wrote. Okay, here you go.
Unless what?
Well, a lot of these whack jobs.
Oh, it's Nick Cage.
The thing where he starts talking and then he does this.
A-hole. Right? Isn't that a thing he did once?
Zeus's butthole.
Yeah. Isn't that way?
Hi, gentlemen.
I'm going to find that old one.
Asshole.
No.
Well, somebody.
What do you see?
There it is.
What do you see? We cut the chit-chat. A-hole.
Yeah, that one.
Oh, that one. Okay.
Yeah.
But there was another one, I think, in the same movie where he goes, and what in Zeus's butthole does that have to do with?
I love that. That's a Nick Cage standard.
Which I hate to just keep doing this over and over in the film, but Nick Cage, man. Did he ever make a great film? Like, he's got some good performances, but did he ever make a great movie?
I wouldn't even say, I was thinking about this earlier. I was like, I didn't want to say the wrong word. Nicolas Cage is entertaining.
Yeah, that, sure.
He's not good. He's not bad. He's just entertaining to watch.
He's really good. He's really good in Leaving Las Vegas. He deserved that Oscar nomination, or even when did he win that year? I forget.
I don't think he did.
I just can't help thinking, if he was acting like this and probably less well than this when he was a young actor and not Francis Ford Coppola's nephew, I just don't believe that he ever has a career.
Maybe.
I think he does. I think he's charismatic to carry that.
I think it's over. Like, right now, it's all terrible. Everything he's doing now is just garbage poo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But garbage poo.
But I mean, I think you also do have to separate the Nicolas Cage action films from the Nicolas Cage serious films. Mm-hmm. Like the snuff film one, 7mm.
8mm.
8mm.
I saw an early cut.
real fast. What's your favorite Nick Cage movie?
Rock. Duh.
Really? I got to say, Con Air.
Con Air for me. But that's my favorite.
For me, it's Gone in 60 Seconds. So they're very similar movies. We just named three very similar movies.
Yeah, they're all the same. They're all the same. Whatever. Con Air is pretty fun, but The Rock always. Always The Rock.
But if you're talking about the non-action Nicolas Cage, I'd say Raising Arizona.
I think there's
a very different, there's two different Nicolas Cages, and you get the National Treasure and the Con Air and the Gone in 60 Seconds, I think, are the action Nicolas Cage, and then you do have the non-action Nicolas Cage and the Leaving Las Vegas and
I think Kick-Ass was one of his best performances.
Kick-Ass was really fun to watch him in that. Yeah, I'll give you that. Face-Off was great, in my opinion.
Wild at Heart.
Yeah, there's some good stuff.
Nobody's saying Peggy Sue Got Married.
Oh,
yeah, nobody's saying it because nobody wants it.
Or Valley Girl.
2005's Lord of War is really good, if you've never seen it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
The second National Treasure movie is bad, but My Name and Comic are in it, so I have to say that. I have to at least mention it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I'll say a movie that people give a lot of flack to that I think is okay by me, and that's Ghost Rider. And the first one, watchable. The second one's pretty good.
You're an insane person. Really? You're an insane person.
I really am. Yes. I don't know why I like it, but the second one's pretty good.
I don't think I ever saw the second one, and that might be the only Marvel adaptation of something that I haven't seen. Right. I know it's not MCU, but it's...
Yeah.
Watch the second one. The first one's poo-poo, for sure. But Spirit the second
of Vengeance.
One,
yeah. I can't believe nobody said The Wicker Man.
Wicker Man.
Oh, please.
Or definitely, Season of the Witch. I mean, come on.
You can definitely name horrible movies with Nick Cage. Yeah. You know, I'm just saying, I can't name a great film, like a really, truly great film. And I guess adaptation gets the closest.
Mm-hmm.
But that's still, really I just... Eh.
Or you know what? World Trade Center, the movie that... what's this platoon made? Oliver Stone made.
Yeah,
was pretty good. Him and that Pena guy. That was a really good, harrowing 9/11 story. I really liked it.
And I hear the one with the ambulance, a Scorsese one, right? The ambulance one.
Bring out your dead or something.
Bring out the dead. Yes.
Right, yeah, right. That one's supposed to be pretty good.
And it's supposed to be kind of trippy, though, because I kind of avoided it because I remember for some reason thinking it was going to be some
Kind
of weird
he was
trippy.
Like a wasn't he a drug user who was working in an ambulance overnight? I can't that I can't remember.
How about
the trailers? I remember turned me off to it. I was like, this looks like one of those Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas kind of. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah. And I was like, yeah, I don't know.
How about Captain Cornhole's Mandolin or whatever that was called? The Captain Cornhole. Something like that. There's a bunch of lists online of his best movies, so you can go look those up if you'd like. I like City of Angels. A lot of people hate that movie.
No, that was... I liked especially the soundtrack, but, you know... That was...
You like the Go-Go Dolls is what you liked.
Yeah!
I liked Honeymoon in Vegas. That was funny. Saw that in 92. Anyway, what else we got here? Oh, yeah, more of these. How about this clip here? It's a ha-ha, funny ha-ha moment.
Ha-ha, ha-ha-ha.
There is Sam Rockwell doing that. Here's I don't think disposals make this sound like garbage disposals in your sink. I don't think they think they make this sound.
Yeah, that was weird.
Depends on what you put in. If you're putting in an entire honey baked ham, it will make that noise.
Yeah, good point.
But if you,
you put in a couple every Thanksgiving. Leaves,
yeah.
I mean, basically, the whole thing stems, the whole movie stems from the fact that he goes out to the pool, grabs a couple leaves out, skims them off the top with his net, puts them in the garbage disposal, and then leaves the garbage disposal in the water running, and all his pills go down the drain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it seems that dumb thing. Well, you'd never leave the garbage disposal on with just a couple leaves.
Yeah.
Well, and also, we've all used a garbage disposal. You keep your hand on the switch, and you only run it for the bare minimum amount of time you have to.
Yeah, you don't keep it going. That whole thing, the entire story pivoted on that moment.
It really did.
Annoys me. Here's a dying Roy. What? I don't remember.
I wouldn't bother you, but... Well, I'm dying.
Oh, I remember this now. No, he was telling Roy he was dying because he was faking it, because he was trying to get him to pick up his freaking phone, and he burped before, and the burp made me laugh.
I wouldn't bother you. But...
In fact, I isolated it, and I can play this anytime. Oh, that's pretty good.
Such dramatic music for a burp.
Here's a mouthful of burger. All right, so there's that. There's not a lot of clips you can get out of this movie that aren't just stupid.
No, but the best clips are Sam Rockwell, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they really are. This is the dude who just saw on Ozark. It's the Altman guy.
Do you mind if I put them up? It helps my back.
All right, there's that guy. You probably hear that and go, oh, yeah, I've seen him in like 1,000 things you can't name.
Mm-hmm. Is he in relation to the director? Does anybody know?
Oh, I don't know. Robert Altman, let's see.
Well, that's a good question, sir.
I like that question. That's a question I intend to answer. Hold on. Oh, gosh, I'm way back in the clicks. Here we go. It's the there he is. Bruce Altman. He is.
None of his trivia on MDB says anything about it.
It would say, wouldn't it?
It should totally would, yeah.
But he did study in NYC with William Hickey, who we love.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was William Hickey 90 back then?
Yeah, he was always 90. Was he never not 90, I think?
Right, exactly.
You got it. here's
my favorite Willie.
It's pretty great. Here's the might vomit moment.
The whole time I was watching my carpet, I was worrying that I might vomit.
I'm worried you might vomit all the time. Jeez.
Yeah.
Just talking about it.
I'm going to make an EDM out of that. See if I can make some cool club music. Best line in Matchstick Men, as far as I'm concerned.
Mr. Schlicker? Hi, I'm sorry. Bam, you waited too long. No prize for you.
Mr. Schlicker? Bam, bam. Freaking Sam Rockwell, come to my house. Let's have dinner. Dad-daughter conversation.
Just watch TV. You don't have a TV?
Well,
seriously, you don't have a TV?
Oh, well, there's a couch. If you want to sit. Or over there, if you prefer. Or the couch. Do you want me to pick you up something on the way back?
I don't know. Here's someone laughing. Don't remember who.
For some folks, money's a foreign film without subtitles.
Oh, it's Bruce McGill.
Oh, that was funny.
Bruce McGill. Nick Cage freakouts are the best, I wrote.
That is wrong what you did, and you're a nosy Parker, and that's no way for a young lady to behave, and shame on you.
All right, what's a nosy Parker?
In which I looked that up in the middle of watching this movie because I'd never heard it before.
Yeah.
I would love to know where you're from right now. If you're listening to this, where are you from that the phrase nosy Parker has been used before?
Yeah. Did you find anything? Did you find like a reference?
It's just a person who's sticking their nose where it doesn't belong.
Sure.
Dang, nosy Parkers are always over here.
Usually names like that are alliterative. Like it's a nosy Nelly.
Yeah. Nosy Parker like can't lose.
Totally
yeah.
Debbie Downer.
So, Debbie Downer or there's another nosy one. There's like, Peter Poker. No, that's a different guy.
That Peter is a different Poker. Guy.
Very different guy. There's
That's
another
my
term,
porn name, Peter Poker.
There's another term like Budinsky or something, or where you butt in and you shouldn't be poking your head around. Ah, I forget. Maybe it is
nosy.
I know
what you're talking about. Keep your nose in your own business, you nosy Nelly.
Or maybe it was nosy Nelly, or just nosy. People were nosy. Maybe that was it.
Maybe.
Which also doesn't make sense. What's it got to do with your nose? It's weird.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, here's a bad dad daughter talk.
I've done stuff with boys. I've done stuff with boys. If I told you, you'd probably throw up right here.
Then don't tell me.
Don't tell me. That's
I don't want to know. Here's something I wrote called "He Really Liked It."
Well, you know, it was a little. It was just. It made me feel a little. You know, I was a little. I really liked it.
All right, there you go. That's
okay. That's
some acting there from Nick Cage, everybody. Nick Cage wants that.
What's that?
Oh, what's that?
What's that?
It's what's that? He says.
What's that?
All right, enough of that, buddy.
Okay.
Did he say what's fat or what's that?
What's that? But you're right that it kind of sounds weird.
What's that?
It does sound like fat.
Yeah. I'm fat, Nicolas Cage. Stop fat shaming me.
It's in the proper terminology is who, not what. Hoop? Okay, hoop.
Hoop.
Oh, it's him making a sound.
Oh yeah.
Pretty good. All right.
Movie absolutely full of that crap.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, constantly.
So much of it.
You know what?
You know,
I don't remember.
He told him to go over the top with the OCD, and he says, could like a lot of the things that I do in my regular life just be considered OCD?
Yeah. I didn't even remember all that from the first viewing. I don't remember any of this like grunting, and I knew you had kind of a OCD thing, like the door shutting thing, but I don't remember any of the ticks or the vocalizations or any of that stuff. Here's about peeing blood.
Have you ever been dragged to the sidewalk and pee until you pissed blood?
Oh my gosh, dude.
That was so good.
Pissed blood!
It's intense. Because
that's part of his Tourette's. They don't really talk much about his Tourette's in this movie, but it's there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he let loose.
That might be my favorite clip of the whole
film. I'm going to use that again somewhere.
Pissed blood!
It's kind of my favorite form of him.
It is.
Yeah, I like when he does that. Well, there you have it. That means time for this. Oh, look, it's the film sack checklist, and I got it right here on a piece of paper. Complete Nicolas Cage freakout mode, check. Sam Rockwell should be in all of the things, check. Always marry the bagger, check. The bagger.
Oh, I see.
Bag it up, baby.
She's a bagger, you know. I like that lady. I like her when she's in things.
I like her, and I actually like the Melora Scott, I think, the woman who plays his ex-wife. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Oh. Really liked her in Magnolia. She's like the poor man's Annabella Sciorra.
Yeah, she's barely in this either.
Yeah.
What was that, a whole hot minute she was in this movie?
Yeah.
Star Trek stuff, Daryl didn't get to me, so I don't know what there are. Bruce McGill played a something once, like a Klingon or a Cardassian.
Tall, alien southern lawyer.
I don't know much about city lawyering, but I'll tell you this, the Federation.
So we went from Star Trek facts to Star Trek guesses.
Sure.
Yeah, let me see, actually.
In Star Trek Voyager, Bruce McGill was Captain Braxton on the episode Relativity.
No, that's the one I'm thinking of then.
Braxton. I want to say that Daryl sent us an email with that because I want to say I saw the whole thing. Just you keep going.
Okay, you look because I didn't see it.
I don't remember.
Yeah. And Nicolas Cage was never any of that. Sam Rockwell was in a Trek-like movie.
Right.
Yes, he was.
I'm sure there are others.
Bruce Altman probably never.
No, I looked at him. I couldn't see anything for
involved.
Him.
Yeah.
The Steve Easton guy who played the old man that was mad at his wife. Let's see. Trek. No. No Trek for him. Yeah, so there may be more, but we don't know. So there's that. Oh, look, a soundtrack grade. I'll give it an A for awesome. I loved all the John Travolta. Frank Sinatra is what I meant to say. All the Sinatra music and stuff.
That was great.
Yeah.
The Cooner music was fantastic.
Love
such
the
a great
Cooner music.
And some 80s stuff in there too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, the Roxy Music song I was trying to track down last night.
Yes.
By the way, Brian Ferry, that guy's weird.
He is weird. best dressed performer, best dressed new wave performer ever, though.
I agree, but
always wears a suit and tie.
His music's great. Their music's great.
And there's a great cover of that song by 10,000 Maniacs after Natalie Merchant left the group and they had their new singer.
Oh, well, did that mean they only had 9,999 Maniacs?
That's when they lost one of their Maniacs, yes.
All right. Oh, I didn't know Natalie Merchant left the 10,000 Maniacs.
Yeah, she left and did all that solo stuff.
Is she still around?
How's life for your career to be remembered as that solo stuff?
Well, I mean, like, she had a bunch of hits, like Wonder...
Oh, right. Wonder.
I have no lyrics for you.
I know the word wonder is in there somewhere.
It's not the wonder at God's own creation, not that song. But it's like that.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, is that the song? Okay.
God's own creation. So you actually know more lyrics than I do.
I used to make this really bad joke in high school because she'd come on there with the 10,000 Maniacs and play on Letterman all the time. Mm-hmm. And I remember this terrible joke. I was telling dad jokes before I was 17. And I remember telling people that whenever I was looking for a new Natalie, I'd go to the Natalie Merchant. And I thought that was the funniest thing. I thought that was so funny. And I had a few friends laugh at it, which was very encouraging. But
I'm so glad someone laughed at it. I'm so glad.
I had weird friends. What can I say? All right. So there's that. Let's see what else. Oh, the Twitter post. This is where you guys in 140 characters or less sum this bad boy up. Let's start with Randy.
Matchstick Man, the movie embodiment of go big or go home. Given the choice, Matchstick Man went home to a pregnant lady.
Yes. It was cutting tomatoes or whatever she was doing.
It was a con. It was a pregnant suit.
What if she's part of the deal? She's gonna take him for all he's worth. See, I'd always be after this con. If I were him, I'd be paranoid the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Can't trust anybody. Brian Dunaway.
Matchstick Men, like a germaphobe with carpet. You'll be vomiting in no time. Whoop. Whoop. Whoop, whoop. Got room for one more. Whoop.
Oh, good. Thank you. Three is good. Law of threes. Finally, Brian Ebert.
All right, Scott, I need your, you have your bell sound, your soundboard bell thing?
I do, yeah.
All right, we're going to use that in place of emojis. You'll know when to put them in.
All right.
Matchstick Men, a couple of dirty, rotten scoundrels focus in on a plan to snatch some money from a mark. But the grifters soon feel the sting of a double cross of a real American hustle.
Oh, I keep hitting it by accident. Sorry.
That fingering it.
Well done. Good job. Oh, don't hit that one.
Live radio, ladies and gentlemen.
Live to hard drive. That's how we work. All right. Well done. That is good news because here's this. Oh, wrong one. Jeez, I can't hit anything right. It's the alternative titles. Mutter Stick Men. Because he mutters, right? He mutters all the time. Or Bruce McGill Against Island. Oh, right. That
You've been
one.
Doing dad jokes a long
yeah.
time.
Look, I've got good training for that. All right, we got an email before we get out of here. This is from Nathan, who wrote in and says, I was listening to the Longest Yard episode.
Oh, wow.
Scott goes off on Indiana Jones' Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. I've only seen it once and remember not caring for it. However, Scott makes a point that archaeological digs shouldn't involve aliens. I still stand by this. I thought about it, though, and our beloved World of Warcraft has nothing but alien-ridden archaeological digs. Everything the Explorers League in WoW is digging up is some kind of Titan or Old God ruins. Not defending Crystal Skull, I just think the alien bit isn't the movie's actual problem. Well, I would agree that the movie's got all kinds of problems, but it's a premise I can never get behind, and that you just now also answered why I never got the archaeology thing in WoW and never do it. I don't play that.
But also, World of Warcraft, like, it lets you know in the first word in the title that it's not like Earth and reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Indiana Jones stuff is on Earth in sort of modern setting. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, that's different.
Yeah. And there's also something about the context of the Ark of the Covenant, while, you know, their representation of that is super magical and just close your eyes, Marion, don't look at it, you know, and it makes everyone's faces melt. I realize that that's also a stretch, but it's
that's my argument. You're okay with face melting, but aliens drawing.
Well, here's why because ancient artifacts and that kind of stuff is culturally and in our heads can be soaked a little bit in
this in old mysterious magical ways. Like, that's okay for me.
Well, that's one take, but we also have plenty of conspiracies that, you know, the pyramids were built by aliens. I mean,
yeah, but got,
there's lore there to support it. It's not like he just randomly, well, yeah, he did.
Well, no, that's just Stargate. You're talking about Stargate. I think that's the only case of the aliens built the
pyramids. I've heard that before. That's not brand new information that Stargate brought to the field. There's been conspiracies about that for a really long time.
Sure, but would you make a movie where Indiana Jones finds out that aliens built the pyramids?
Absolutely. If they asked me to make a movie like that, I wouldn't even be on the show.
You'd pocket the money and then you'd laugh all the way to the bank.
You could bitch all you wanted. I'd be like, whatever. Look at my Indiana Jones and weird alien movie. Ha ha.
You might actually be right about that.
Yeah, maybe you're right. But my point is, it feels like you're exploring the future, not the past. And it needs to stay in the past. And I realize it's past aliens.
Right.
But I just think it's a dumb idea.
It's okay not to like the idea. But I think the idea has merit.
Get your why tie
aliens to the future? We could have past aliens.
What I'm saying is keep Indiana Jones where he thrives. Archaeological, ancient, artifacty. That's his domain. This movie
we're talking about brings aliens out of left field. It doesn't even foreshadow aliens for 3.5 movies.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, like, that's why it's so shocking. Freaking World of Warcraft is a universe of different planets. Like, that just,
yeah. If the next Star Wars movie is all about the main character starting a cafe, well, then that's dumb. Why?
So y'all are because okay, it doesn't fit. You're okay with me not liking Toy Story 3 because they went from friendly childhood toy to death, destruction.
What? That didn't do that.
Sadness.
That movie's always been about that.
The first two was about having owners, and the third one was about a total abandonment.
No, no. Here's you know what?
You almost went into Nick Cage right there.
We need to butthole. No, here's what I'm saying. We should have a conversation about this sometime at length, because the Toy Story thing I don't understand. The first movie fraught with dangerous peril. Second movie, same deal.
I'm okay with peril. I'm okay with peril. I don't like the abandonment.
But there was no abandonment. At the end of it, it was a lesson in everybody has to get to a point in their life where they grow up. They cannot run around with these toys all day. This kid had to go to college. He had to find a home for these things, and he did. And it's a melancholy moment for sure, but there's nothing abandoning about it. It wasn't like he dumped him in the trash. Like, the second movie is more about that with what's her name? I can't think of her name. The girl.
The toys were stolen from him in the second one.
Yeah,
stolen.
But the girl. Remember, the girl was left by the girl by the side of the road in a trash heap to get picked up by a junk takeaway thing.
That's
and called, it played
that. Name is Jesse.
Jesse, and they had the Sarah McLachlan music all sad and everything. Like, that was riddled with those kinds of feelings. That's what Toy Story does best. Is it? It addresses these feelings of I miss this, or I had to leave this, or I moved on to something else. And, you know, that's what they do. And I don't think that third movie is any different. They all did it. All three of those movies play with that. My only problem is that there's a fourth being made, and I don't understand that. Like, that to me was a perfect ending for that series. And to do a fourth feels weird. I think
it's a fair comparison of how you feel about the Indiana Jones and how like Toy Story 3, because there was such a large gap. You ask yourself, why make another one?
Yeah.
Why make another one? We wrapped up the story nicely. Why bring all these characters back out just to make me sad?
To make money. Yeah.
Make me money.
Yeah. I didn't feel that way with 3. I think 3 was appropriate. 4, I don't like.
And that's fine.
And Crystal Skull, I completely agree that one did not need to get made. But I'm trying to think of an argument that I would get less support or more support for than me being pro Toy Story 3 and anti Crystal Skull. I feel like I might be in the majority. I just think that might be the case.
I think very possible. Just because you're in the majority
doesn't mean I'm right. Yeah, no, I agree. I agree. We have some examples of that in modern history.
Yeah,
I totally agree. Well, there you go. There's your email. If you'd like to send your own email in, it's real easy. Not only possible, but quite simple. Send us an email at filmsack@gmail.com. Next week, we are watching Pumping Iron, FilmSack's first documentary film.
Okay.
A documentary?
That's right. Ibbot, you're a big fan. You like that Pump and Iron deal?
I have never seen it, but I know I want to.
Okay, there you go then. It's so just to give people a hint, it's following Schwarzenegger and
Frigno
on their road to Muscle Man Town.
On their road trip buddy movie to Muscle Town.
Wouldn't that be great?
Isn't one of those things where Arnold's wiener, we don't see Arnold's wiener in this, right? What am I thinking of? There's something where Arnold's wiener's at when he's young.
Oh, you're thinking of the internet.
Hercules in New York or something like that. Isn't there
something where his wiener's out? Yeah. I'm not interested in that as much as I am. But this is going to follow, you know, what it takes to be a pro bodybuilder and who's there. And this was this, is this older? Was this made some time ago or is this
1977? Yeah.
Okay. Right. So this is before any of the things would happen with those two guys. Nobody's the Hulk yet. Nobody's the Terminator yet.
Right.
These are just a tiny amount of
fame.
Was
he the Hulk yet?
No. Oh no. 77. No. That was 80s, wasn't it?
But
it started in the 70s, though, didn't it?
Did it?
You know what?
You keep talking.
We're going to find out next week.
Yeah. Or now. See, let's see. Hold on. The Incredible Hulk. Okay. The Incredible Hulk TV show series 78 and 82. So it would have been right after this.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
Right there at it.
Maybe this movie helped get him the job as the Hulk.
It probably
did. We'll find out next week.
It probably did.
On Film Sack.
We will. Lou Ferrigno still kicking it. Kind of a jerk, I heard. Anyway, we'll talk about that next week also, right here on Film Sack. In the meantime.
I like that you said he's kind of a jerk. You heard.
I did hear that.
And he can't hear.
It was from, nice. It was from some experience somebody had here at Comic-Con in Salt Lake City with him that was real rough, I guess, so. I don't know. We'll talk about all that.
I tried to talk to him for 20 minutes. And he just kept his back to me.
Did he?
What a jerk.
Man. Well, what a jerk. Yeah. It's almost like he can't hear you. It's weird how that works. Also, I have a clip of him. You want to hear him? Hold on. Brian will know what this is. Right here. Anyway, we're out of here.
Doing a lot of pumping Red Bull.
Yeah, that's right. Filmsack.com is our website. You can leave us emails at filmsack@gmail.com. We are on Twitter at Filmsack. And don't forget, folks, when you leave us reviews on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, that's very helpful to us. So thank you for doing that, those who haven't. If you haven't, consider it. That's filmsack.com for details. That's going to do it for us, for me, for Brian, and for Randy.
Yeah.
We'll see you next time. Boop.
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network.
Frog Pants Network.
Get more shows like this at frogpants.com.
Pissed blood!
Jeez.
I love that.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.